Here's a question. When you were a kid and you first started listening to music, did you dream of being in a rock band? Like, who didn't, right? For me, it was Guns N' Roses. Growing up on Mercer Island, Mark Rose was captivated by rock and roll. And like most kids, he wanted to be a part of it. But unlike most kids, Mark did end up in the music business. And like a lot of rock and roll stories, Mark's had a burnout ending that left him picking up the pieces of his life. But at the beginning, there was just the music.
And so I was 8 years old, and I got to see the Beatles, and I looked at the spectacle of this thing. And I knew right then and there I was going to become a promoter. I don't know if I knew what that word was, but I looked down at the Beatles. Nobody on that tour, nobody in the audiences ever heard a thing, because the screams were so loud and the PAs were so small. There wasn't one song you ever heard. And I thought, I don't think I'll ever be able to write songs like that. You know, I don't know if I'll ever be able to grow bangs like that or look good in Beatle boots. So I want to be the guy in the short sleeve, you know, arrow shirt, the clip-on black tie with a clipboard telling everyone what to do, how to make this happen.
As you were getting more and more serious about music management and promotion and actually getting into that line of work, what was going on in your life besides that, in your personal life?
I would drink with the goal of passing out on a Friday and Saturday night, and then I'd hold off during the week because I had to go to school. And then once I got into the music business, at about age 19, I could see that these people, these touring, you know, managers and some of the groups and things are you know, this is the late 70s, are using cocaine. And I thought, well, that's probably the way to go.
Who were some of the musicians you worked with at that time?
It was just about every single musician, you know, you and I ever knew from the late 70s, 80s, and 90s. So it was Van Halen and the Kinks and Rodney Dangerfield and Neil Diamond and I don't know, ZZ Top and Heart.
What is unique about drug and alcohol use in that kind of a social setting as compared with what most civilians encounter?
I think there's a big demand on artists to, well, I'm going to be perfectly honest here, to make money. And, you know, for them to go up on stage in front of 10,000, 20,000, 75,000 people a night and get that accolade, it's not really easy to kind of calm down after that, or to have that expectation of playing over and over again in front of, you know, big audiences. You know, they, you know, there can be a tendency to turn to drugs.
Well, given that you were in that kind of insular world and sort of hard to get perspective on your own behavior and stuff like that when you're surrounded by it, how did you come to think of this as a problem that needed to be addressed in your own life rather than just a fact of life?
It was due to my tolerance. I was in my early 40s, and one day I woke up, or I came to, and my tolerance had gone from these planning stages where I would say, okay, I'm going to start taking drugs and alcohol at, you know, 6 or 7 at night, and then I'll pass out by this time. I'll be ready for the next day. Well, that tolerance had moved down to the noon hour, and I thought, this is insanity. I need help, so I got to go. I have to go check myself into one of these treatment centers. And back then, the only image I had of a treatment center was from the movie One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
So what was your experience of treatment like?
It was the greatest, most profound experience of my life. I tell people I got thrown out of treatment because my 28th day came up. I didn't want to leave. I wanted to, like, live there and learn how to talk to people without judging them and shaming them, or these things that I had the ability to do at one time. And it was just a fantastic experience.
Wow.
Yeah.
As you were kind of figuring out who you were without the drugs and alcohol, as you were kind of pulling these fragments of your identity back together, what was that like and what did you find?
It was terrible. That first year, I was working at DreamWorks, Records as a promotion and marketing manager, and I went back to work right away. And I had this fantastic toolbox before I got sober for doing business, and that was to lie and to be angry and to throw something against the ground or wall, you know, if I wasn't getting my way. It was like a petulant child, and most of us in the music business were like that. And I kind of learned these things in treatment, like, you know, listen to people, compassion, you know, empathy. And so ultimately, after about 6 months of that, I didn't know how to be in the world.
How did you figure out what your next chapter was going to be like if you weren't going to be working in the music business?
I had a little private plan in my head, which I don't think was that great, and that was to go get this degree, get good at it.
And when you say it, you're talking about counseling or?
Yeah, drug and alcohol addiction counseling. To get that degree, to get my certificate, to get my license, go to LA and move there and be addiction counselor to the stars, you know. And once I was kind of getting near the end of school, I got a job offer to work there in the Midwest at Hazelden. And so I worked for a few years with adult women in a 28-day inpatient. And God, if you had told me 2 years before you'd be a counselor working with adult women and in the Midwest, it's a year. Well, here, let's get you into treatment. So it was an incredible experience, and that's how I got started.
And you still work with musicians, right?
I do. I do group therapy 1 hour a week on Thursday nights down at the Musicians Union for anybody that's struggling, whether it's roadies, you know, or musicians or managers or whatever, because there is that extra layer of challenge, I think, that comes with being a musician. I mean, if you can imagine, you know, some musician coming into my group that just plays three nights a week in a local band, but usually they're playing in bars. So it's asking them to play the tape out, you know, because if they have that one beer, are they just going to end up, you know, sleeping behind Hattie's hat in a ditch and then going out and buying, you know, hard drugs or something like that? You know, how do we create more, you know, coping skills for that and ways out of that so that they can still play their music? So,
do you think that there are skills or experiences that you bring from your first career that help you in your current role as a counselor?
I think so. I think it really stems back to when I was first starting in the music business, and I'm about 18 or 19, and I'm working at the Paramount, and the, you know, the promoter would say, Mark, you know, here's the keys to the van, go to the airport and pick up this group. And it happened early on. I'd pick up these artists that were really artists, and they had that part of that, right, I guess, right brain that really jettisoned in that direction. And so they were always kind of disheveled, you know, or couldn't really shake a hand, you know, firmly, things like that. And I always thought, not always, but early on, I thought, you know, these guys aren't that friendly. I don't really dig them that much. But then I realized they're in a different world. And so I learned to relate to them, relate to art. I love artists. And I think that's helped me in this career, to be able to really be an active listener. And you know, sometimes I've heard people talking about music where sometimes you listen in between the notes and you can hear things. And to be able to listen to what they're really saying, what they're really trying to say about themselves, and to understand them and to have empathy and caring for them. I think I brought that over from working with those early artists that were true artists. Yeah.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming in and telling us
your
story.
You're welcome.
Mark L. Rose, he runs Mark L. Rose Intervention and Therapy, and he lives in Seattle. Thank you.
You're welcome.